Thanks, Mirama. Kia ora and welcome to the panel on RNZ National. I'm Karen Hay. I'm in for Wallace Chapman. And thanks for your text. Here are some virtual get well cards for you, Wallace. That's so lovely, your son's story from an old guy without kids. Lovely to hear from you, Wallace. Great to hear a real-life event. It should be embraced. It's okay to change. That's from Dennis. And Ross says, hi, Wallace. Last lockdown, I rode a bike into a parked car, shattered my jaw, split the bike in half, and my helmet. Helmet saved my life. Matt says, I'm a trauma therapist, Wallace. Try EMDR therapy. It'll get you back on your bike. And Steve in Eskdale says, kia kaha, Wallace, aroha from us all. And Isabel says, and another important message for Wallace and the listeners is that his helmet should now be binned and a new one bought. It's interesting. Thank you, Isabel. And our panellists today in Wellington, Georgie Stiliano, kia ora, hello again.
Good afternoon.
Robin says the sun is out in Wellington. It happens often.
Oh, not today. It's definitely not out today. It's freezing.
And in Christchurch, Peter Field, Associate Professor of American History at Canterbury University. Kia ora.
Yes. Get well, Wallace.
Get well, Wallace, yes. 9 minutes past four, and Australia has signed a security pact with the UK and the US, and its acronym is AUKUS, I'll say AUKUS. The new partnership was announced in a joint virtual press conference between the US President Joe Biden, UK Prime Minister Boris Johnson, and Australia's PM Scott Morrison. And for the first time in its history, Australia will build nuclear-powered submarines using technology provided by the US. In response, Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern says New Zealand's position in relation to the prohibition of nuclear-powered vessels in our waters remains unchanged. The centrepiece of it is nuclear-powered submarines, and all parties are very well versed in understanding our position on nuclear-powered vessels and weapons. And the new pact between the three countries has been seen as an effort to counter China in the Asia-Pacific. Well, to discuss this is Dr. Anna Poles, Senior Lecturer at the Massey University Centre for Defence and Security Studies. Kia ora, Dr. Poles.
Kia ora, Karen.
Analysts are calling this the most significant security arrangement between the three nations since World War II. Is that your assessment of it?
Well, certainly it is extremely significant, and it comes off the back of growing concerns over the last few years about the role of China and the concerns about the Indo-Pacific being a front line of increasing insecurity. So it certainly is significant. And in terms of bringing together the military industrial complexes of the three countries, the three signatories, Australia, the United Kingdom and United States, this is very much a step change in the relationship.
Would New Zealand expect to be briefed about this?
Well, not necessarily. This signals a division, a sort of separation between the trajectories of Australia and New Zealand. And it's noteworthy, as the Prime Minister Ardern noted herself yesterday, that she was the first world leader that Australian Prime Minister Scott Morrison briefed about AUKUS prior to the announcement the following morning. And there certainly wasn't an expectation that New Zealand would be asked to join AUKUS or necessarily be briefed on it prior to its announcement.
Well, China wasn't specifically named in the announcement, but the embassy, China's embassy in Wellington, has accused the countries of a Cold War mentality and ideological prejudice. Do you think there's any merit in that?
That's quite a common line that China, that Beijing does pump out in response to these kinds of actions. There's no doubt about it. The Defence Pact, it states in the announcement that it's about defending shared interests in the Indo-Pacific, and it's very clearly about counterbalancing China. It's about concerns about Chinese militarization and pushing back against Chinese coercion in the region. And it's not surprising that there was going to be some kind of response from Beijing like this.
So where do we stand on all of this, New Zealand? Are we a friend or are we an ally of the US?
Well, we have a close strategic partnership with the United States. We only have one ally, and that is that is Australia. What it does mean for New Zealand is that this is an inflection point, very much an inflection point for New Zealand. New Zealand hasn't been sidelined or excluded as such from the Defence Pact. It's operating in a completely different league in terms of military technology than New Zealand does or will do, particularly with respect to the nuclear issue here. What it does reflect, though, is that Australia is on a strategic trajectory that New Zealand is not on. Australia has deepened its defence and security integration with the United States, has a very clear common position with respect to China, and New Zealand has not participated as fully in the same way that Australia has. What this does mean, though, in terms of New Zealand's relationship with Australia, is that there is growing divergence in it. And we've seen this for a number of years now. There are increasing divergences between the two allies. And this is as simple as well, complicated, really, in terms of capabilities and interoperability between Australia and New Zealand militaries, for example, and also in terms of how does New Zealand maintain its relevance to Australia? How does New Zealand continue to burden share, which is one of the key elements of being an ally? And those are some of the questions, obviously, that are going to be, hopefully, asked in Wellington.
Thanks, Anna. Georgia, do you think this security arrangement between these three countries is needed to counter China and the Asia Pacific?
To put it shortly, yes. I mean, we heard from the PM and various New Zealand, the officials' response was obviously that increased engagement in the Pacific from the US and the UK is obviously welcome from a peace and stability standing. But I mean, really, the question has to be, well, is it going to lead to less peace and stability because you're going to have these superpowers sort of jostling over the Pacific? I mean, we've seen firsthand the influence of China in the Pacific. So I think New Zealand would be welcoming more attention to be paid. But yeah, I think the question for us and one that I'm keen to pose to our academic is really, are we going to see the inverse?
Pose away.
Is that Anna you mean, or do you mean Peter?
Oh, sorry, both academics. I meant Anna, but Peter equally is interested to hear from you.
Yeah, Peter, give us your view.
I'll certainly give you my view. I mean, the first one is timing. We're talking seriously. It seems to me this is straight away a distraction from the single greatest disaster in American foreign policy and reputation that we can think of. So let's not kid ourselves. And Jacinda Ardern was very clear about this, even talking about thanking Doha, thanking the Australians. And then she adds in as a subtext, oh, and of course, thanks to the United States, too. So I think that the United States has hugely dropped the ball here. And so if we want to understand things, I think that's the biggest issue of the moment. So good on New Zealand for taking an arm's length away from the United States at the moment. I certainly would. But more to the point for me, and I think Anna's reached for this very cleverly and carefully. This is about strategy, and this is an inflection point. I would say the New Zealand basically has a warehouse foreign policy, which is whatever the warehouse jingle is, you know, where everything's made in China. Is that it? The warehouse where everything's made in China.
No, I don't think that's it.
No, I don't think that's it either. Sorry. But I think we've made a decision that, and look, in some sense, the United States has too, with Walmart, that we're going to decide that things cheap here means that we'll trade with China no matter what. And I would be very, very worried about Chinese interests. And if we want to call this a Cold War, then I wouldn't call it a parallel one, because as much a mess as the United States is right now, the United States is what we are, an open, free country that could never have and would never tolerate, say, a president for life.
Can I just ask you quickly for a comment? Who will defend New Zealand if there ever was a military threat, if nuclear subs aren't allowed into our waters?
We would.
New Zealand.
Well, that would be the first thing to say. Do we defend ourselves? Well, of course. We're a sovereign nation. We don't look to other people like parents. We are New Zealand, and we have a foreign policy and a military.
Some would say that military is depleted, not just somewhat, but greatly.
Well, I think we'd make a big mistake if we depend on anyone else. We certainly could have alliances and strategic understanding, But I think it's a mistake for any country to say, let's rely on the United States.
Georgia, quick comment on that.
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree with Peter there. And obviously, we've seen successive defence ministers pushing to actually slow that depletion that you've just talked about, Karen. And I think there's obviously a good reason why they would need to do that.
Thank you very much, Dr. Poles. Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure. Thank you.
That's Dr. Anna Poles from Massey University Centre for Defence and Security Studies. It's 18 minutes past four. And given the nation's response to the two Aucklanders who used their essential worker exemptions to travel to Wanaka in a level four lockdown, responses that ranged from anger to disappointment, it was quite a surprise to find out that they weren't the only ones at it. Three Auckland men have been arrested in Ohakuni after travelling to Turo Ski Field. Two 23-year-olds and an 18-year-old have been charged with failing to comply with a directions, restriction, prohibition, COVID-19 order and taking / obtaining using a document for pecuniary advantage. And the three of them will appear in the Auckland District Court next week. And then there's the 20-year-old who's also been charged because he allegedly crossed the Auckland border to get McDonald's with some mates, posted it on TikTok. He's appearing in court in early October. But so far, no charges against the couple who travelled to Wanaka. So we asked criminal lawyer and public law expert Bill Hodge for his opinion.
In my view, there's a big difference between the case of one airport to another airport to a rental car to a batch, which seems to suggest premeditation and deliberation. The New Zealand police are meticulous, they're careful, and the difference is that some young people who spontaneously say, I know, let's jump in the car, go over the border and get some McDonald's. There isn't much research, investigation. The police don't need to track down the travels, whereas the trip to Wanaka has a bit more, what shall I say, sophistication to it. Seems like the police are meticulously gathering the evidence because the last thing they would want is for this to fall over because they've missed out on a couple steps. I really do feel strongly that the New Zealand police do their absolute best to treat all people that come to their attention equally, regardless of who their parents might be. And I think it's hard to do that, but I think the police do their honest best to treat defendants equally. If you're the police officer and you realize, oh, my gosh, the person I've got here is the son of the prime minister or whatever it might be, just to make up something up, they're going to be careful and maybe they will take a little bit more care because you don't want to make mistakes in a very celebrated case where you know that the media, the glaring eye of the public and the scrutiny of the media are going to be brought down upon you. So you might just be a little more careful. That's the only difference that I could see.
That's criminal and public law expert Bill Hodge. And Peter, Bill's made it very clear there that he thinks it's a matter of process and the times needed to gather evidence. What do you think when you heard about the others that had broken the rules?
Hi, thanks for asking me again. I think Bill's made an excellent legal point about premeditation. My point is not legal at all. It would be about caste and culture. William Willis is 35 years old, and I think it's just atrocious to think, oh, I'm better than other people, so we can do this, and we'll get away with it. I'm much happier to hear about kids doing things. If kids do things, it's stupid. But when other people who are grown-ups and lawyers decide they're going to flaunt the law, it's a kind of attitude that says, you know, lockdowns and masks are for the plebs. For us, we're better than that.
Georgie, I keep calling you Georgia. My apologies.
It's all good. I totally agree. The whole thing sort of stunk of entitlement. And, you know, thank goodness they did come out and apologise because they were not doing themselves any favour. And I know at work we were talking about them needing some public relations advice. But I hope that it is a process issue and not anything more dodgy behind the scenes. I'm sure it will be. And I think the point that has been made about obviously the travel log and having to really be clear about how they used that documentation is a bit more difficult than some kids getting Maccas.
There's been a lot of musing over the last few days about forgiveness, what kind of society New Zealand is. How tolerant are we? We get the apology and we're okay. Obviously not in your case, both of you. Apology not accepted.
No. Not accepted. I mean, I do appreciate that they've produced some great memes about the team of not quite 5 million. But no, I don't think there's much tolerance. People are doing it tough, and obviously in Auckland more so than anywhere else. So I think there is a huge public sentiment of, are you kidding me? And everyone just needs to play by the rules and suck it up. And it's not like these two sounded like they were in dire straits. So I don't think people have got any time for it.
The number of checkpoints, there's 10 checkpoints in the north and south of Auckland, and these stats are interesting. On Wednesday, of the 16,238 vehicles that were stopped on Wednesday, 148 were not travelling for essential reasons. Those are big numbers, aren't they? I think, Peter.
They might be. I certainly would say this, that if we're talking about absolution, well, I'm not a priest, so it's not, no one's asking me for forgiveness. You know, and if they're all going to McDonald's and posting on TikTok, then that's another kind of mistake. I know fast food was bad for you, but I didn't think about it exactly that way. You know, I don't know. I don't feel it is. I do think, though, we should be aware that I imagine Aucklanders have been so good, except for a few exceptions. And we should acknowledge that over and over again and say, you know, there might not be much toleration for the next one.
24 minutes past four on the panel, and as I said earlier, 11 new cases of COVID in the community today, all in Auckland. While the numbers are heading downwards, which is a positive, and we head into the weekend here in Auckland, which is where I'm operating under strict level four lockdown conditions, well, there is a general sense of inevitability that if we do go down a level next week, level three is not going to be a whole lot different than level four. And actually, some of us have forgotten what it means to be at level three. And talking about takeaways, Peter, the general consensus is that it's level four with takeaways.
Yeah, you can have McDonald's next week, hopefully, Karen.
I don't actually personally eat McDonald's, not often anyway.
But, no.
Is that entirely accurate to prepare us for what we hope will come next week? RNZ health correspondent Rowan Quinn. Kia ora, Rowan.
Kia ora, Karen.
As I said, Aucklanders are hoping we'll drop down a level, probably no chance of dropping two. But what's the feeling among the health community?
Well, I mean, the Prime Minister did indicate last week, didn't she, that it looks like if everything keeps tracking well, Auckland will go to level three next week. I guess we have seen those cases are still dropping. Carolyn McElnay said at the 1 p.m. briefing today from the Ministry of Health that they're cautiously optimistic that this outbreak is contained, but there are still a few little, there's the odd case that pops up here and there, another person who just turned up to Middlemore and was randomly tested and had COVID. There was a truck driver that went over the border. So we're sort of hearing of these cases from time to time that mean there maybe is still a little question mark here and there. But overall, it's looking pretty good so far. But then, you know, you never know what can happen in 3 days.
So can you just take us through what level three means for Aucklanders if indeed we go down a level?
Well, you know, as you said, the takeaways, I think, is the one that's on a lot of people's mind after, you know, it'll be 5 weeks by then of sorting out every meal for yourself. So that's one of the big ones. You can also get, you can go through a drive-through. You can get the food delivery services like Delivereasy or Uber Eats can drop food off to you. Of course, it all has to be contactless. And Auckland has got pretty good at this because it's had a lot of times at level three now. And so a lot of restaurants now do delivery. So if you want your kind of fancier form of a takeaway, you can do that as well. Cafes, you can go and get a contactless coffee and a pastry or whatever it takes your fancy as well. So that's a big one. But of course, there are other things as well. Your bubble, the general idea is your bubble still stays really small, although you are able to expand it a little bit. You can let close family in if, you know, you have maybe an elderly family member or someone who lives by themselves that's been doing it tough, they can join your bubble. But the big message is don't go too wide. You know, you can't have all your mates over. You can't kind of have a six bubble. And even if people are vaccinated, you've still got to really keep them quite small, but there is a little bit of room to expand it a bit more. The other big change is work. You are encouraged to work from home if you can. That is the plan. They want as many people as possible to work from home. But if you have a business where you can't work from home and you can socially distance, that's the big key thing, then you are able to go to work as well. So that's another one of the big changes, I think.
Fantastic. Thank you, Rowan, for joining us.
Pleasure.
Neither of our panellists are in Auckland at the moment. So, Georgie, what's the general feeling in Wellington? You okay to stay with level two for a while?
Well, I got to say, it's proving fairly restrictive and a lot of businesses are deciding to keep workers at home. So Wellington CBD has been pretty quiet this week. And I think the Delta level two, the new settings in level two are not sitting very well with hospitality businesses. I know that a couple of Wellington hospo institutions were at their capacity yesterday evening of 50, and people are trying to book tables to have Friday drinks, and a lot of places are booked out. But I know the PM has also signalled that that is likely to change next week. I think, just picking up from what Rowan said, in level three, you can merge, you can add childcare into your bubble. So if people have in-home care or a nanny arrangement, you are able to accommodate that in level three. So that might be useful for Auckland parents.
Yeah, good advice. And Peter, what about the O3? How are you going in Christchurch?
Well, Karen, would this be the wrong time to put in a shameless plug for the University of Canterbury?
Not sure. What does it in regard to?
Yeah, come here. We're hardly ever in level four. Things on campus are different, but it's clear to me, and we'll talk about generational differences later on, I think, in the program, that certainly the students are absolutely eager to engage and be in as normal a condition as possible. And that's just great. You know, for me, I would say it's not about us, though. I don't like the idea of level four with takeaways. I think that's a misunderstanding and a kind of arrogant view. And I know we don't hold that. We're not arrogant. I think it's about work and about living and self-employed and earners. At least at level three, we might see more activity and people be able to. And this is exactly what we found, at least with level two plus here at Canterbury, is that people have gone back to work. Tradies are out there, right? We're in construction. And it's so good to see people who, unlike us, can't work from home and get their paychecks on their way back, at least toward level two, and earning. So it's about them. It's much less about us, I'd say.
Thanks, Peter. Peter Field in Christchurch and Georgie Stigliano in Wellington.